Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Moments to Rock, if that's the case. Hope you are a listener and you've come back for more. If you're not, I shall tell you a little bit about what this is all about. As I just mentioned, we're called Moments to Rock. I'm your host, Tony Michaelides, and we are part of the Pantheon group of podcasts. I'll tell you a little bit about Pantheon before you go check them out. Pantheon Podcast is the largest music podcast site in the world. There are some great presenters there on various podcasts right across the board. So if you like music, you're at the absolute right place. There's plenty of stuff there to listen to. We're up to about episode 80 or so, and if you delve back through our archives, you'll find in early episodes interviews with the U2, with the Ramones, with the Cramps, Steve Winwood, Sir Ray Davis, etc., etc. We also talk to music industry insiders and artists, and in a nutshell, get them to share moments that rocked their world. Like I said, the premise being, if I enjoy the stories, why wouldn't other people? And there's some really great stories. Incredibly inspiring, and a lot of the time, hilarious. So without further ado, we'll tell you today we have Mr. Paul Ripley. He runs a radio station in my old hometown of Manchester. We've known each other a long time now. And we have discussions about here about the music industry and the radio industry in particular and how things have changed. But without further ado, I shall leave it to him.
Hi, Tony. My name's Paul Ripley. I am the founder of the first online station ever, a professional station in Manchester in the UK many, many years ago. And now I also run Europe's biggest online station here in Manchester as well, called Fab Radio. I've managed bands. I've been involved with music all my life. I'm a fan of music. And I'm a fan of yours, Tony.
Fantastic. Well, we go back a few years now, Paul, obviously from your days at Manchester Online and things.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've done a lot of stuff, haven't you? Because you've done like front of house sound and you've played in bands and everything. So what kind of, what hit you at an early age? Was it just like you wanted to be a rock star like we all did?
I think we did. I think that certainly at the time I was a young kid in the punk period. I was a fan of Mark Bolan and David Bowie prior to the punk period and at school. He was a weirdo, if you like, David Bowie, where everybody liked Slade and bands like that coming up during the 70s. I was a fan of David Bowie and this slightly odd musical world, which I preferred. And as punk came, it opened the doors to everyone, three chords and you were playing. And so we formed a band during that time and I met so many people during that time as well. But then life came along and things changed.
Yeah, fair enough. We have families, we buy couches, we do things like that. Was there a time where you kind of just wanted to stick at it and see where you went from being a musician? I know from, you know, talking to you over the years and stuff, you're well into photography and all things,
Kind
of everything kind of creative in a way.
Yeah. I mean, for many years, I went around the pubs and clubs with my friend playing in a covers band. It's the enjoyment of just playing on stage and getting applause is so addictive. It's worse than any drug. And it's a wonderful feeling, just getting applause from people by singing songs. And I suppose, I know a friend of mine who was during the punk days, who is still playing today in a Pink Floyd tribute band. And so all his life, He's made money and a living playing music, and to me, that's a huge success. In a punk band, to the age of what he is now, he's bought a family, he's bought a house, he's bought a car, and he's never made it as sort of deemed making it, but he's earned enough money to get by and have a great life, just by playing music. The Australian Pink Floyd are amazing. They're better than Floyd. Last time I saw Floyd, they're better than them. No, it's called. However, I'm a fan that someone can earn money in music. That to me is wonderful.
I get what you say about tribute bands, but for me, I think whoever came up with the idea was a genius. Because if you think of it, we were lucky enough. I mean, I always say in my own spiel that I was fortunate enough to see everybody that ever meant anything to me in 2,000 seaters. It works at both ends of the scale, because I went to see the 30th anniversary of the Joshua Tree, and it was pretty amazing. Because you've got to remember, like, they're better musicians now, U2, than when they were playing those songs in the 80s. So, with the performance that they can put on, with the backdrops and the actual money that they've got behind them, they can do spectacular shows. And to go out and commemorate a period like that, for me, worked incredibly well. But there's a pay-to-play thing, isn't there, in the UK?
Yeah, it's dying off that now. We was The radio station was a part of a petition to try and get rid of it totally out of Manchester, because to me it's just ripping bands off, young bands especially. Promoters, do your job is my theory behind that, and bands, do your job, entertain people, get people out and get support. But when you bring money into it and you can sell so many tickets and you get half the, I've heard so many horror stories behind that. Pay to play is a no-no for me. Absolute no-no. It's just a tool for unscrupulous promoters to make money, in my opinion.
From looking at the music industry point of view, because obviously programming music and stuff for the radio station and stuff, there's a phenomenal amount of stuff that comes in because so many people are just doing things on computers now. And you don't need a record deal and you don't need a manager. I think if you're pretty good at social media, you can get a certain amount of awareness. So what's your feelings about emerging talent?
Well, the whole thing when it changed, when radio stations changed, now radio stations are in the UK are owned really by two companies, and dominated. And so the days when you did radio, where you had freedom to do what you wanted, and it's changed for the worse, I'm sorry to say, and people have lost their jobs in radio, and it's boring. As simple as that. Most radio stations in the UK are boring. You've got to get specialist programs, and hence the rise of, I'm glad to say, of independent stations like ourselves. And it's shown in the figures that people listen to. They want something different. They want to have the days back when you were playing songs on your show back in Manchester. You was introducing people. Emerging bands, we call it, but introducing bands and music to a different, to so many people, and that wouldn't happen now. It doesn't happen now, except on independent stations. So you, John Peel, et cetera, were so, I don't know, paramount to the success of bands, to actually get them up there and get listeners, and then hopefully get a record deal, maybe, an agent, a manager. And they would have a career. That's so, therefore, it's so hard now for bands because that doesn't happen. However, there is like a cottage industry where, like you just said, people can distribute their own songs, they can record them at home. Now, the success in that isn't, don't believe the hype. You still, in reality, majority of bands have to go to the studio, pay for studio time, pay for promotion, pay for usually a manager or an agent to get them out there. So it has changed and it hasn't changed. It's just different now.
It is different. I mean, I come from the School of Artist Development. I'm just good to go back to what you were saying about in my kind of early radio days in the 80s. I mean, I've spoken about this quite a bit recently with interviews promoting my book and stuff like that and things. And I kind of, in a way, thought I was one of the first punk jocks because I only got a job on Piccadilly Radio back in the day when Mark Radcliffe was living with us and he moved to London to get a job on National Radio, Radio 1. So I complained to the program controller that, do you know who comes from this city? And then reeled off bands like the Smiths and New Order and Joy Division and blah, 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 Stone Roses and things. And he just said, why don't you do it? So I said, right, I will do it. So I had no experience whatsoever. But I think that the thing is, in both areas, from my PR side of things and from a radio, I don't think until like you get so far down the line that you see the gratitude and think, nobody would do that. Who would put me on the radio? I'd never done a mobile disco or a wedding or a bar mitzvah in my life. And I'm broadcasting on a major station. But I used to get a huge buzz out going into Piccadilly Records back in the day, Paul, and finding out they'd sold a few copies of a record I played the night before. The absolutely. Only people who listened to my show were music lovers. And radio, without getting too deep into what it sounds like now, but, you know, it's almost like the type of stuff you expect to hear when you go shopping in the supermarket. It's like background music.
Yeah. I used to love, the first time I went to the States, I'm a big fan of American radio, certainly around the 50s, 60s, 70s period. And I used to, you go through the States and go through different states and you hear different radio stations and they're quite unique to that area. And I don't know if it's changed much, but I remember going to Carolinas and listening to a station there. And that's just wonderful, absolutely wonderful that they own their own characters. And the personality in radio has gone. You seem to be, you have to have presenters now who are bland and no personality, where people like you had a personality. And in the States especially, you have some crazy people doing radio and promotion. And it's cheered me up. That, I think, is coming back, but only on independent radio, online stuff. And so it does turn in a circle. And I do think we've gone through the rough bit, and I do think it's changing. So therefore, it'll benefit bands. And as the bands come through, because independent radio gets more listeners, bands get listened to more, and build a following, build the social media, build the YouTube. So I think it's in a good place. On its way to a good place, I should say, the signs there that bands can do it, even though getting on mainstream radio, unless you've got lots and lots of money, is hard. Elton John, it's okay, isn't it? YouTube, it's okay. They've made the money. But they still get paid the most from the PLS and PRS, which is our distribution of the money from the earnings, than anybody else. It's hard, don't get me wrong, it's hard, but I think there is light at the end of the tunnel.
It's interesting because if you know how to kind of weave your way through the internet and stuff, you can find the music. There are good enough bands coming through.
The good thing about them days, though, the gatekeepers were the labels, and so now it's open, you know, YouTube, Spotify, there's so much rubbish out there as well. So the labels used to be the gatekeepers of the music industry, and they used to invest in the bands and give them a 5-album deal or whatever while the band developed, like back in your day. That's gone. And so the labels want something instant, polished and ready to go. And so you're talking about, you know, cheese really, aren't you? There's very, very few bands break through that period. But I mean, the bands, for example, an example of a band who I love at the moment, who are doing really well, you won't have heard of them. They're called Sam Anna. And they're from down south to where I think near Essex. An amazing band, creative, wonderful videos. And they seem to be doing really well in their world. You won't have heard of them. Most people don't know of them. But they're selling, I don't know, 800 tickets at venues and creating wonderful music.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, you have to have the places to play, don't you?
Lots open in Manchester now. Let's say we've gone through this period, I think, where Manchester now looks a little bit like Manhattan with the skyscrapers. But however, the venues were going, people complaining as people moved into the city. But then they moved there because of the music. And then they complained about, you know, noisy nights and people. But there's so many venues now in Manchester. Small venues, but lots of them. I mean, we've got the biggest venue in Europe just opened literally yesterday, or the other week, I should say. It's doing well overall, and people are turning up to these venues. I watched an American band in a venue near me, and it's something like it's packed, but it's a small venue, but packed, and the band were touring from the States. Just nice to see. Nice to see, Tony.
The advantage back in the day was, of course, you know, if you had a deal with a label, they would fund you in as much as tour support. I still say to this day that if you two had signed to a CBS or as they were back in the day, or an EMI or a Warner's, they would have been dropped, because by the time, you know, they start to get their money back, so to speak, the record label. Most labels would have dropped them and it would have been a tax loss and we never would have been talking about them today.
You've been listening to Moments That Rock with me, Tony Michaelidis, and today's guest, Paul Ripley, talking about the change in the music industry as such, and also, of course, the change in radio over the years. We'll be back after this.
Absolutely. So going over your career and all your time in radio and stuff and things, are there some special moments?
When we first launched online radio in Manchester, like I say, with the first sort of professional one with the studio, broadband wasn't a thing, really. We're still on a dial-up. And so, although we were the first, we had a limited number of listeners because the cost of the streaming is cost a fortune. A couple of years later, when broadband sat, came more normal to housing, to break that mould of the ones, we have to be different than the pro ones as such, the FM stations. So we had an idea of that we'd go for names. So I was lucky enough to get people like Woody Woodmansey, who was a spider from Mars, on the show.
And the only surviving one now.
Yeah, the only surviving one, yeah. And other bands as well, we had quite a few big names who gladly came on the show as well, because they weren't getting much press. There's that changeover, weren't they? And he told me some amazing stories on the show. Unfortunately, the recording I put up on some podcast somewhere, and it's just the podcast company went down, and so did the recording, so it's lost in the ether. But it's a wonderful time. I was talking to Woody Woodmansey, David Bowie's drummer. It was incredible thought to me that I could even reach out and actually talk to someone like that. And he was open, and he talked about his son who plays drums. And he's just a nice guy. However, he had mixed feelings about David Bowie just on the financial side of it. Like he and the rest of the band, the Spiders from Mars, were really ripped off. He had mixed emotions about it, I think. I think he loved David, I think. I think he actually loved him as a friend. But he felt let down as well. And obviously when this splits up as well, that's another story. But he was mixed because he felt like... And he didn't really blame David. He blamed his manager. Was it Main Man, wasn't it?
Johnny DeFreeze, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and he sort of blamed him as much as David about how the money was split.
Well, yeah, obviously, like we both kind of, are fans of Bowie and stuff and things. And looking back at that period, I mean, Bowie had, spent so much time through the 60s with no success. And he didn't come from one of those privileged backgrounds you were talking about before. He had a lot of mental illness in his family and stuff. And then Space Oddity happened. And then he created this myth of this alien rock star. And created this band, and went out and was every bit as good. But Bowie being Bowie was already kind of thinking of the next thing, because that was in his entire career. Because if you remember, the success of the Spiders came with Bowie's heroin addiction and everything that went with it. And we wouldn't be talking about him for years to come if he hadn't have got rid of his habit. He was smart enough to not join the 27 Club. But Bowie at the time was also getting ripped off. He didn't realise that, they had they had one girl running an office in Japan. They paid for breast enlargement. They were flying first class. They were doing all the things that spent a lot of money. And David himself got to realize that at the time he was behind on his rent in London on his flat, but he didn't realize that he was paying for all that and it was all recoupable. And Bowie hadn't had a manager kind of since then because of a really bad experience, which was enough for most bands to split up. I can see if you were part of that band. I mean, Ronson went off and had a bit of a solo career, didn't he?
But again, Ronson is talking to his wife. She feels the same thing, same as well, where she felt like he was used by David in some ways and didn't get the credit he deserved, especially on, say, when he did the Lou Reed album, Transformer. He did the arrangement of that. And David Bowie as well took some of the credit for what Ronson did. According to his missus, and she feels like, again, she didn't know hatred or anything like that towards Bowie, but she felt he was used, I suppose is a clear word. And it's sad, really, when when it turns out like that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in a way it's a part of the growing up period from bad experiences that you've had and stuff. Because I mean, my experiences of, working with Bowie and stuff, and being appreciated as a member of the inner circle. I was the great thing. I mean, I've read articles about since that. I read an article that I just came across where the band, not soon after his death, were talking about it. Bowie never micromanaged, He actually invited you into his band and then he left you alone. It wasn't like we need more guitar, we need more bass. And he said, the fact that I was recruited into David Bowie's band made me a better player. And I think that was, great. I don't know that if Bowie would have done that back in the day. And I think the fact that success came, he grew into like a great artist. Over the years and stuff, and I think he's one person we'll be talking about forever, but we could talk about him forever, but let's move on. But I can understand the certain sadness, because if you explode like the Spiders from Mars thing, you would have thought there might have been two or three albums for you before there was a change of direction. So
I tell you what, you should revisit with Mick Ronson on is Pinups, Pinups
oh
album.
yeah.
I've not heard that for years and years and years. You listen to it now, and you sort of listen in a different way, and you'd be quite surprised, Tony. There's some enjoyment for you this week.
I found a great piece on Bowie and the spiders and stuff from this guy, and he was talking about like Bowie's period and then and things, and even things that become like, I mean, he kind of killed off Davy Jones and became David Bowie. And when you think of it, it's common sense, but it didn't occur to me at the time until I heard this guy say it. But a lad insane was just what he was saying. It was a lad insane, because Bowie was going through like a period where he might have lost it, and he kind of, through his music, he kind of repaired himself, which I don't know. It's more than just being a singer and a musician and stuff. Going back to the things that were special with you, apart from Woody. I mean, have you had opportunities to meet people? Speaking as a teenager, I mean, I know what meeting Led Zeppelin was like for me at a 15-year-old, and it still resonates to this day.
Well, I've met people due to the radio, people like Bill Nelson from Bebop Deluxe, if don't you remember
He's a good
them?
guy. I've never met him.
Yeah, lovely guy. Intelligent human being who's still going, he's still at it, and he's still being weird and wonderful. Who else did I meet? Oh, plenty of people from the Manic Street Preachers to bands that came through. Obviously, you talk about bands doing well. Bands like I'm trying to think of Manchester bands. I mean, all the Manchester people, your mate from New Order,
Oh, okay, yeah, ex-New
Mr.
Order.
Hook. All the Manchester bands, because it's quite as although it's quite a big city, Manchester. It is when you're in the music business as such, or the media business, you tend to know most people really, because it's a little clicks here and little clicks there, but you tend to know most people, and so. Yeah, I mean, the Oasis Brothers, I met Liam. I wasn't very keen on Liam, to be honest with you. And many, not most of the Manchester bands I've met and chatted to, and either had on the show or just met on a social basis, which you would never have met. And I've, these music like you, I mean, I'm just a music fan. And so it's a wonderful life, really, in the music business, but it's weird as well, and it's heartbreaking as well. And well, music is like that anyway, isn't it? Love songs and sad songs. It's
Well, the thing is, there's nothing like music to back take you back to a time and a place, I
no.
kind of remember moments myself from just, I mean, the reason I do this is completely self-indulgent, because I'm reaching out to people that I haven't spoken to for 40 years. That's not you, obviously, but Nasha from Frankie Goes to Hollywood and stuff. And a guy last week's radio show, podcast was Chas Banks, who tour managed the Pixies. What I loved about
I love
Manchester
that.
in the period that I was running my own company and obviously doing my radio show and things, was it wasn't just the bands, Paul. It was the creative industries. If you wanted to talk, like Factory Records ran from Manchester, Simply Red's management company ran from there. If you wanted to meet with Simply Red's manager, you had to get on the train and come up there. I mean, the Beatles couldn't wait to move to London. And I think the thing is the fact that I was allowed to with no business experience, start a PR company and have the support of the media and people writing about my radio show and things is an incredible thing for a city like that. And at the time in the 70s, we're talking about is we all know Manchester was a shithole. I mean, you know, if you read Andy Spinoza's book and stuff, but I wasn't aware of that because I was 20 years old and I was in the music business. I was, my job was an extension of my hobby, but I don't know that I'd have achieved that if I'd have worked in another city.
Well, I knew it was a shithole as well, but it was my shithole. You know, it was that type of attitude. But you talk about people before you met. One of the nicest people I've met is, do you remember?
Me.
Besides you, Ian Hunter and Mott the Hoople.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was managing a band called Sitting Pretty, and we got the tour. So we were on tour supporting Ian Hunter.
Oh, great.
Ian Hunter is part of the Hollywood Vampires now, isn't he, with Johnny Depp and also, and he was huge, big friends with Mick Ronson. So he told me a few stories about Mick when they played together. They went out as the Overnight Angels at one. I remember going to see him as a kid. It was amazing. And he was just a big fan of Mick Ronson. But what a nice guy. He was helping the band I was managing at the time. He was helping our lead singer saying, no, don't do that. You'll ruin your voice. Take some of these, do this, rest that. And he's just a helpful, amazing. And he's 73 and he sounded just as good. We talked about Heritage Act before sounding rubbish. He was sounding better at 73 and still running around the stage. Amazing guy. Ian Hunter. What an amazing guy.
Yeah. And of course, All the Young Dudes, Mr. Bowie's song.
Yeah, absolutely. Which saved the band, didn't it, at the time? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they went on to a wonderful success. And like I say, and he's got a new album out at the moment. I mean, he's still working. He lives in just outside New York somewhere. So he's at top of the list as a good guy, Ian Hunter.
Had you ever considered making a record yourself?
Me? No. Don't get me wrong, Tony. I came from the punk period where the three chords was the main thing. and I've not progressed much from there, really. So when I was going around the pubs and clubs playing with my mate, the talented mate, I was either playing simple bass lines, simple bass lines, or simple chords. Yeah, I'm no musician. I blagged that. I actually blagged the whole music thing. It was definitely... but however, I still like seeing... I don't even remember Ed Banger.
Yeah.
And Nosebleeds, he's playing next week in Manchester somewhere. I might go along to that. I loved, although you liked you two as they progressed, I liked the rawness of it when there was early days. And I used to go to a place called the Electric Circus where I saw the Clash, the Pistols, you know, and numerous bands who all came huge. And it was so raw, so real. And again, makes you love music. You know, it's just... Like you going to the, what's the name of the venue?
International,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of part of growing up. I mean, I was there like four or five nights a week, you know, I'd go on. I think at venues like that, you would go and see bands you hadn't heard of because there was a certain standard that you knew, like, they were going to be good, whether or not it was your taste or something. Yeah. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was great. There was always places to play and there were always like small little shitholes to play as well, weren't there? Which is part of growing up.
A question for you, though, Tony, instead of questions to me. Over the last couple of years, have you seen any bands or heard bands that you think, wow, they're going to make it? They're something special.
Well, you put me on the spot, probably.
I have.
But I'd have to, like, you know, we'll run out of time if I kind of sit here and pause, you know. But
in general. I mean, say yes or no, really.
I kind of root around the internet and things. But I'm not that accomplished to find some of the stuff that I'd probably... really like, because it takes an eternity in searching for them. You know, I'm not kind of rooting around playlists and stuff on Spotify because I have a day job, you know, as well. So it's not that easy. Yeah. So I know I'm body swerving your question a bit, but
that's allowed.
I'll come back to you on that one.
It's allowed. I just think you've got any top tips there for me to listen to.
Yeah, I tell you what, I will give you a tip, Paul. That I did an interview with a couple of people a few years ago in St. Petersburg when I was living in Florida. There was a kind of festival, a kind of bit like a South by Southwest. They were trying to do something like that. They only did two of them. And they had a premiere of a film called Dare to Be Different. And I've interviewed Ellen for my podcast, and she was the director of the film. And also in that was, I went to see the film, obviously. And I also interviewed a guy called Dennis McNamara, who ran a radio station called WLIR, which is what that film is about. They were the first station in America. They were the first band to play like Billy Idol, The Cure, U2, The Alarm. All those bands that had been ignored, apart from like college radio, they literally dared to be different and stepped out of the norm and left a huge legacy. They were based in Long Island, and they became like a really unique station for doing that. And that's kind of like, I don't know, my idea of rebel radio, you know, just saying, don't tell us what we'll play. We'll just go for this. And it's really successful. But it's worth listening to the way they talk about radio and those bands, that if they didn't have that break in America, they wouldn't have got the support from the fans, because yeah. everybody used to listen to a station like that just wasn't having yeah. their bands played elsewhere.
Which is what I was saying to you at the beginning of the show. Bands now get support and play by independent stations, online more so than FM. And it gives the bands that little lift up and exposure, which all bands need. And so the rise of the internet and online station and podcasts are making a difference, an absolute difference in the music industry, I think.
Lots of things have changed. And if you think of the time when we were going out, I mean, my pocket money was just spent going into Manchester, One Stop Records, and buying something that the staff yeah. behind had left me to listen to. I spent like 3 hours in listening booths and stuff. But don't forget, there weren't like video stores, and there wasn't even Blockbusters, and there weren't like computer games. There wasn't that amount of stuff that
media
took care of your disposable income. It was like music, and a lot of the people that you met and the relationships that you built, it was music that brought us together, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's nothing, I don't care if you're into football, you know, rugby, anything, it's not a touchdown, a goal or anything, but I always remember where I was when John Lennon died.
Yeah.
And things like that, you know.
But I want to add to what you just said there, Tony. You said about, you know, there's so much media around now. There's gaming, there's, you know, all sorts of streaming TV shows and all of it. However, the thing about podcasts and radio is personal. It's in your ear.
Exactly.
And that'll never go away. Mm. Never go away. There'll always be a demand for that, because you can turn off. You can close your eyes. You can walk on the beach like you said you did.
Yeah.
And that's why the success of audio-based stuff will always be here.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, I mean, podcast has replaced mainstream radio. You have to go to the internet stations to find the type of music that, you know, you want. I mean, there's always a sense of discovery with music. It's not about churning out the same old stuff all the time and just the same records in rotation. I mean, that's what the old stations, the AM stations, were for. They catered for that, for the older audience and stuff.
Yeah, and now in the UK, we've got 70s radio, 80s radio, absolute 90s, absolute zeros, absolute classic rock, absolute 20s, absolute 10s. I mean, my goodness. It's just, where's the new stuff going to get through on that? So you've got no chance.
Well, thank you, Mr. Paul Ripley, for taking the time out to come and entertain us with your stories and your moments that rock. And we look forward to speaking to you soon, sir.
Well, best of luck with the edit for this show. And hope to meet you again over in the UK.
Absolutely. I'll be there. Thanks very much, Paul.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate. And there you have it, Paul Ripley on this episode of Moments That Rock. If you like, subscribe, tell your friends, review it, and come back for more, because we'll keep churning them out. Thank you again, and goodbye.